We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is Blue Moon. It's the original fan-made Manchester City podcast. Coming up, we've got news and views from City's Week. It's your club, and this is your show.
So here we are then. Manchester City stand one win away from making English football history. Four top-flight titles in a row is the prize if Pep Guardiola and his team can navigate a way past West Ham on Sunday. Not necessarily an easy task, despite all the factors that appear to be in City's favour, as previous final days of the season have shown. We'll talk about that game a bit later on in today's Blue Moon podcast, and we'll hear from James Jones from We Are West Ham to find out how their season has gone and what obstacles are still in City's way. We'll also be talking about the week just gone and how City have got themselves into this position. That means dissecting a comfortable afternoon at Craven Cottage and one of the most uncomfortable evenings ever at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Two absolutely huge hurdles cleared in two very different ways. Get your lucky pants on and wash your lucky sky blue socks for Sunday, because we're also talking about superstitions on today's show. On that front, sports psychologist Martin Robert Hall will get into why Guardiola has stuck with his woolly jumper despite some good weather this week. So let's get to it. I'm David Mooney. With me for this one, I've got City fan Adam Keyworth.
Hello, thanks for having me, and I'm very glad to be on when things went well, because I was pretty worried when you asked me to do this before the Spurs game.
Yeah, I had to get the questions in early, just in case. And we're also joined by the Sun's Martin Blackburn. Hello, Martin.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Adam. Hi, guys.
Good to have you back, Martin.
Yes, pleasure to be here again.
And of all the weeks as well, it could have been such a different week if things had gone differently. But we'll get into that shortly. We've learnt this week, before we get into all of that, we've learnt this week that the Premier League is going to vote on whether or not they should scrap VAR. So it got me wondering if you two could bin off one thing from football, what would it be, Adam? What would you get rid of if you could?
When you asked me this, I think we both had the same response, but I'll let you have that one. Goal music, because it winds me up. And I did think, I know this sounds very, very glib, but substitutions.
Really?
Because I went down some rabbit hole the other day of listening to some old blokes talk about football back in the day. And the lack of substitutions, and how obviously it's a lot easier now that there's five substitutions where there used to be one. And I just can't quite fathom a world where there would only be one sub. So if I could just do that for 1 week to see how it goes, I'm getting rid of subs. But Mooney, you can have the joke.
Well, I was going to say Pep does the no subs things quite regularly, so like you're fine with that.
That's very true. No, although if you'd have tried that in the week, then I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'd just been off Spurs away, Martin, because it's been one of the genuinely worst experiences of my life, consistently year on year. Anything you'd get rid of?
Yeah, I would get rid of the rule about getting a yellow card for taking your shirt off, I think. Dave.
Oh yeah, fun police, aren't they? That's what they are.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I was covering the Man United game last night, and I was writing a bit about Amad Diallo, and I'd completely forgotten. But when he got that incredible winner against Liverpool, he then got a red card, didn't he? He could for taking his shirt off when he scored. So that would probably be one that I'd get rid of. Of course, Aguero famously twirled that one around his head, and that. I think he got a booking for that, didn't he?
Yeah, he was the only, he was going to say final days and all that. He was the only player booked that day.
yeah. And the other one is this, I mean, it's sort of connected to VAR a little bit, isn't it? But the linesman letting play go on, you know, if there's a close offside call, letting play, seeing how it plays out in case the goal goes in. I mean, you know, City have had a couple of injuries, haven't they, this season because of that, where you know, effectively in dead time, if you like. So that could go for me as well, you know, let the linesman make his decision. and stick his flag up, basically.
Yeah, if VAR goes, that'll go. So, you never know. Yeah. Fingers crossed, though.
Fingers crossed.
The other thing, Adam, before we get into it, can I suggest to bin off kits with gimmicks? And that's quite topical, given that City have released the pictures of the 0161 yeah. shirt.
Yeah, I mean, you could just get rid of gimmicks in football. I've just watched that before we started recording this. I've just watched the really well-edited video and like the wrapper over the top and all the rest of it, which I do feel like we've seen every single season for the past 10. But it when it's not Noel or Liam wearing it, or it's something to do with the Hacienda, then it's got to be to do with, this time, a landline 0161 number. When's the last time anyone dialed 0161?
Yeah, I was going to say, I imagine there's a lot of young kids today going, Mum, Dad, what's a landline?
Yeah, exactly. I imagine it'll sell really well because kids are going to buy it and it's going to have Haaland on the back. So they could put anything out now. We're at that stage where City could put any shirt out. And I know that we're all expecting the away kit to be one for us older bunch.
Younger heart, Adam, that's what we are.
Well, yeah, I think they've done well with that this year, where there's something for the kids and then there's something for the slightly older generation.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Let's talk about the football then. Like every week, this episode of the Blue Moon Podcast is sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. Make Green King your go-to destination for the season's final stretch. Why? For one, you can wash every televised City game down with delicious food and refreshing beverages. And with 900 sports clubs dotted around the UK, chances are you're within walking distance of your local Green King. Let's be honest, watching the football is way better with your friends and family, so get the squad together for every televised Premier League fixture in an atmosphere worth sharing. Whatever happens against West Ham, if you're not at the Etihad, you can share it with your friends and family at your local Green King. And don't forget to download the Green King Sports app to enjoy exclusive competitions and discounts whenever there's a game on. Let's start then with the overall picture and how City have got themselves into pole position for the final weekend. Martin, genuinely, and I mean this like completely sincerely,
yeah,
that Spurs game on Tuesday night might have been the worst experience of my life. I've genuinely sat and tried to think of things that have been worse than that. That 90 minutes experience in it. As a neutral, what was it like?
Well, it's funny actually, Moon, because you know yourself, my boyhood team is Blackburn, the club of my heart, as Pep likes to say. You and I have discussed May 2000 many times before, yeah. Haven't we? So, but it reminded me so much of when Rovers won the league in 1995 at Anfield, of course. So you had this situation where all the build up to the game was dominated by the fact that Liverpool didn't actually want to win because they were determined that United weren't going to win the league. United, of course, they're big rivals. So you had this on the day. You had this sort of strange atmosphere where the Anfield fans didn't really get going at all. But I think that sort of conveyed itself to the Blackburn players really, and they didn't get going at all either. They did actually score the opening goal, but ended up losing the game that day. And of course, what happened at Upton Park made it made sure it didn't matter. But I did get the sense that it was a little bit similar on Tuesday night in terms of City just weren't themselves, were they, first half? They really, really seemed, whether all the talk that Spurs were going to chuck it in, toss it off, whatever the phrase is, whether that had sort of got into their heads, but they just weren't themselves at all first half. And second half, they weren't great either, were they? But they got the job done. And the Tottenham fans only really got into it when they were 2-0 down, didn't they? Mm. I'm sure the City players were nervous. Of course, I thought Arsenal looked very nervous at Old Trafford on Sunday as well. So maybe, you know, for all the time City have won the league and been in this position before, maybe nerves do still creep in a little bit. So, but just must be a huge relief for them to have got over the line.
Yeah, Adam, you told me privately that I'm now going to make public that you avoided the game entirely by going to Co-op Live. Of all places, Co-op Live might not have even been open. You might not have been able to get in there to avoid the game.
Yeah, well, I didn't fully do it on purpose, but I was given the chance to either continue with my plans to go to the gig at Co-op Live, which was also pretty surreal being stood outside the Etihad playing away, or to watch the game. And I decided, right, my nerves can't take it. I'm just going to ignore it. I had WhatsApp notifications on my phone, but I wasn't really checking them. I checked at half time because there was like a break in whatever was going on the show. Had a look. I thought, oh God, I'm so glad I'm not watching this. And then I went to the toilet twice in the second half and found out we were 1-0 up and thought, right, okay. And I went to the toilet on like the 85th minute and I was just wandering around and there was a bloke stood at the urinals with his phone propped up against the urinals watching the game just as Haaland gets the penalty. And he's having a wee and he's waving his hands around to his mates, or I don't know if they were his mates or he was just trying
just
to...
Just anyone nearby, yeah.
And the next thing I know, I'm washing my hands and he's going, it's buffering, what's going on? So I checked my phone and luckily we'd scored and I just went over to him and I said, he scored, it's 2-0. He said, right, I can go back to the wife now. And I thought, how long has this man been stood in the toilet watching the game? Like, it's halfway through the show. It was a really weird experience to not be watching it, but I still felt the sickness of seeing it being 1-0. And then just having a deluge of messages saying, oh my God, or Edison's gone off. And I thought, Christ, has Edison been sent off? I couldn't put anything together at that point. I got home, watched the highlights and thought, I'm so glad I didn't watch it. And then I watched the entire game again back last night. And it was just as stressful watching it back.
Really? Did you not have the relaxation of knowing that it turned out all right in the end?
No, because I still think Son was going to score. As he was going through, I thought, that's in. It's 1-1.
That's just you two being City fans, isn't it? All times.
It felt like one of those games where it did just fall for us. And we've had a lot of those, obviously, to get in a position where we have. But there also has been, as Mooney said before, going to Spurs away, it's never fallen for us. Son scores that chance every single time. And it's always the same chance. It's a breakaway, 1-on-1, and he scores. It just fell into our laps. And I mean, the relief, I think, more than anything. I really just didn't want it to end up on Sunday where we go to that game and think, right, we've got to score 8 today. I just couldn't be bothered with that.
Tough.
But I said this before the game and there was a lot of people whose nerves had really gone. And I said, this side has never let us down. And they won't. They'll do everything they can. If it doesn't go in, it doesn't go in. So I was kind of at peace with it. And I was at peace with it until it was 1-0. And I thought, oh God, do not mess this up now. Yeah,
there was nothing peaceful for Tuesday evening about for me. I'll be honest with you. I mean, Martin Adams mentioned it there. The moment that Son ran clean through, like anyone who's been suggesting that City games are a formality or like this title is cut and dry for a while, like that's the moment that you can point to and say, well, it clearly isn't, because at that point, Arsenal fans were off the seats. City fans were heads in hands. Like what you had so long to process what Son was doing and when he ran through. What were you thinking?
Yeah, I mean that's the peculiarity, I suppose, of this whole narrative, that it's all predictable and all that. I mean that would have been an incredible story, wouldn't it? If Tottenham had effectively handed the title on a plate to their sort of big rivals, their first title in 20 years, of course. So I thought, you know, as a sort of neutral who has a big soft spot for City, if you like. I mean, I just thought it was incredible drama. It really was, you know. And I was tense watching it as well, you know. And effectively, you know, I didn't have a dog in the race as such, but yeah, I mean, that was the moment right there, wasn't it? You could argue there was always going to be a lot of stoppage time. City would have had to sort of pull themselves up by the bootlaces and try and get a winner in the last 10 minutes or so, but. But yeah, I mean, Son's record against City is such that you just thought, "Oh my goodness, he's going to score!" It was a really really dramatic moment. Akanji had a really good night, but he almost gave him two goals, didn't he?
Yeah,
there was one to Kulishevsky as well, which he handed them on a plate. So a strange night for him, and yeah, just a strange night all round, really.
And what about Ortega though? Because in terms of one-on-one with Son. One-on-ones don't generally get much tougher in the Premier League, and he's just pulled that save out of the bag.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, you're in the goalkeepers union yourself, Moon, of course. And it's been, you know, he's really stepped up this year, hasn't he? I think he's had some absolutely excellent games for City. And, you know, and you're now sort of hearing City fans wondering if maybe he's actually a better goalkeeper than Edison. I mean, he's not going to be the number one because of Edison's footwork, is he? But if you're talking purely as a goalkeeper, there wouldn't be a lot in it, would there, really? And to have a number two goalkeeper who you rely on so much and you can trust so much as that. I think Pep used the phrase in his press comms the other week. He said he can sleep well at night knowing he's got those two guys to sort of battle it out, if you like. But yeah, what a huge moment. And of course, you know, now he's going to go down in City folklore no matter what happens in the summer, isn't he, because of that?
Yeah. Any hope of him signing a contract, or is he dead set on leaving now?
Well, he wants to be a number one, doesn't he? He does like living in Manchester. His family are very settled here. They've got another baby on the way, and I think, you know, from what I've gathered, he's the contract offer's been on the table most of the season. I think him and his agent feel it could be slightly better. You know, I think he feels there could be some more money in it, and maybe an extra year on top of it. I don't know the exact details of what he's been offered, but I think he will. I think he wanted to give himself some options, really. You know, Bayern Munich showed an interest in him last summer. Forest have made an inquiry in January, I think it was. So, yeah, he just wants to keep his options open. But, yeah, I mean, he is too good to be a number two, isn't he? So that's the problem he's got. But the other thing, you know, if he's not going to sign, then City will probably look to sell him this summer, because his stock's never going to be higher than this, is it? They should get some money for a guy who they got on a free transfer 2 years ago. So, yeah, my hunch is he's going to go. But, yeah, it's not impossible that he stays.
Yeah. Adam, in terms of what he's done this season, I mean, you think about the times he's come on for Edison as well. He's like four times, and no goalkeeper in the Premier League has gone off more than in a season than Edison has this year in four times. But he's done it at Anfield, Liverpool away, at St James's, Newcastle away, and at Spurs, you know, the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. And like each of those performances, he's come in and had a big game.
I think it's just nice to be so calm when your goalkeeper goes off. I think that's probably the feeling that we've all had, that Edison goes off and it's not like Zach Steffen's coming on where you're like, Christ, anything could happen here. I think it's just he's a really calming figure to have coming on. And Edison was very unlucky. I've seen the video back this morning. You might have seen it on social with like Bernardo putting him in the recovery position. Edison was completely out when he got hit. And then I wouldn't have liked to have been Pep telling him he was coming off, because he was on a rampage.
He didn't want to come off, did he? No.
Oh, God, no. But he's come on, as you say, four times and made big saves in pretty much all of those games to keep us in it. And he could just do the greatest thing here. Because he will play against United in the cup final. If he wins that game, like off with him and let him go. And it's the greatest send-off he could have to win us another FA Cup against United. So I do kind of feel sorry for him. He's too good to be our number two, but we also won't be able to replace him, which is quite sad. But he is way too good to stick around and play 10, 12 games a season.
Adam, were you surprised Edison stayed on for as long as he did after that collision, given the state he was in?
Yeah, he was completely knocked out. And I'm really surprised. The other thing, it took absolutely ages for the physios to get on. The players were going mad to try and get people on the pitch when he was just writhing around. It's pretty grim if you've seen the video from behind the net. It's not very nice. The concussion protocol, though, it obviously works, because he didn't want to come off. He would have told the physios he was fine if that rule wasn't in play, that he had to come off and it wasn't his choice. So, yeah, he wouldn't have saved himself, would he? Because we know what he's like. He's not the most... I don't know how to say this nicely. So I won't say anything. I'm glad he was saved from himself.
Yeah, yeah. Martin, the concussion, they didn't use a concussion sub. They just used a regular substitution. So, and Guardiola said afterwards that it was an eye problem, nothing else. So were you surprised that he didn't go off earlier?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. Yeah, and also, you know, it'll be interesting if he was, as Adam said there, if he was not clean out, then there is a sort of period when you're not meant to play again, isn't there? Is it a week? Is that still in place where you're sort of not meant to start another game until you're fully recovered? So probably need to check that, because that would obviously affect whether he could play against West Ham or not. So I mean, it looks such a, when they're saying on the TV, you know, we're not going to show it again because it was that bad, they must have taken that decision quite quickly. And, you know, something serious is going on by the reaction of the players around you. So I personally, at that moment, I didn't expect him to carry on at all, no. So, great sort of bravery. But sometimes you need to be saved from yourself, don't you, really? And no matter what Edison thought at the time, you know, you can't really argue with it the way Ortega came on and played, can you? So the right thing was done in the end.
Yeah. Just on the nerves, Adam, because me and you were both feeling it for the game. I'm wondering if the City players themselves have been feeling it recently, because we've not really touched on the game at Craven Cottage. It was a comfortable win in the end. But the players were in the tunnel for 8 minutes before kickoff in that game, just kind of almost itching to get out there. And then you watch the performance against Spurs. They were very edgy up until it went to 2-0. I'm just wondering if you know, like, as experienced as they are, if they are nervous as well.
I think it's only natural that they would be, isn't it? Like the pressure and everything. And they must have felt the nerves from us as well. Like, it's, they had to go there and win in a place where we won in the FA Cup, but they've not even scored there before. And that will play on the minds. But I know that Spurs had a couple of chances, but it did feel, and this is with wonderful hindsight, having watched it after the fact, it didn't really feel like they were going to lose that game.
God, that's 40-40 hindsight, that one. That's like,
it's almost like when they got the first goal, it calmed them a bit. Then they got very nervy again. Akanji then tried to play in Son, and we did our best. But I think watching the Haaland penalty, I'm quite funny with Haaland taking penalties most of the time. Soon as he stepped up to take that, I thought, he's scoring this. And it's probably the best penalty scored for us as well. So there's probably nerves, but I think that's just natural. And I'm hoping they're out the way now, because we don't want that for the weekend. We don't want them going into that game thinking about all the possibilities and everything. Just go out and win. But again, it comes back to this, that team has never let us down.
Yeah,
we've had some results that haven't gone in our favour, but they were always just going to do whatever it took. And if it was enough, it was enough. And luckily it was.
Pep was out. You probably, you've seen the footage. Pep was asked about squeaky bum time, wasn't he, in the press on Monday, and talked about, give quite a funny answer, but he did talk about how, you know, having a few nerves is good, really. It's a good thing. So, you know, from that, he referred to the players as well. I think there will still be a few nerves kicking in, despite everything that team's been through and everything they've done. They're still tense moments, aren't they? And a bit of adrenaline, I think, is probably a good thing.
Yeah, he was rolling around on his back though, which after surgery on earlier in the season, I'm not sure if the lightest thing he can be doing. That, he got through it all right. Let's talk about Erling Haaland, because he obviously scored the goals at Tottenham. Martin, has he scored any more crucial for City than those two?
It's hard to think of any, isn't it? I mean, they were perfectly timed, weren't they? Just at a time when, you know, City fans were starting to worry that it wasn't gonna come. So, and then, you know, Adam was talking about the penalty there. It was interesting, the celebrations of getting a penalty. I've never seen anything quite like that. They were almost convinced that he was going to score, weren't they?
Yeah, don't miss it after doing that though.
No, exactly. It would have looked well if they'd then missed it and still had another 10 minutes to get through, wouldn't they? But but no, I can't think of any. I sort of thought about the one he got at Bayern Munich, against Bayern Munich, to sort of put City 3-0 up, and then he scored over there, didn't he, to sort of put away any chances of Bayern Munich getting back into it. But I think possibly those might be the biggest ones he's got, really, because he did actually go a little bit quiet during the run-in last year, didn't he? For all his it's hard to say that 52 was a disappointing tally, but he did go a little bit a little bit of a drought by his incredible standards at the end of last season. So yeah, I mean, he would probably talk about the goals in the Manchester derby and that sort of thing, but yeah, in terms of the timing, absolutely perfect for him and for City.
Yeah, and if he went quiet last season, Adam, he's not this season. Nine goals in his last six Premier League games, seven in the last four. He's flying right now.
It's almost like he's probably the best striker on the planet, isn't it?
And, funny that, isn't it? Yeah. And
he goes a few games without. Hasn't he got something like 63 and 65 league games or something?
Not far off, like, one-on-one, is it?
I mean, it's ridiculous. And it was funny the other week, wasn't it, when Keane and all of his merry men were writing him off as a League Two footballer and all the rest of it. He's the one man that you want. And do you know what? I really, really wanted him to be the man to score the goals on Tuesday. I wanted him to be the one who got us through that game, because he has scored big goals, but they're the kind of goals that really, really matter. Like the third, fourth and fifth against a team when it's already 3-0. We're already two up with 5 minutes to go. Great. Wonderful, but him scoring two massive goals at Spurs to take it to the last day is what we really need him to do. So I was made sure that it was him. And he looked so calm. His celebrations weren't big Haaland celebrations. He wasn't giving it the knee slides and the big other stuff. It was very different, I think, watching that.
I wonder if that's tension, though. I wonder if that's a got to get the job done sort of thing, rather than got to enjoy the moment. You can enjoy the moment at the end of the game when you've got through it. So I wonder if it's that. Martin, quick word on Kovacic as well, because he's found himself in the run-in team. Gvardiol, his compatriot, is firing in the goals left, right and centre as well. They've been a pair of good acquisitions this year.
They have, yeah. I think people were a little bit sceptical, weren't they, about Kovacic at the start. But his CV is incredible, isn't it? All the Champions Leagues he's won. I think has he got four? Is it? I think four or five, maybe. I don't know. But he had a long spell at Real Madrid, and he was very good at Chelsea. So to get him for that price that they got him for was actually a good bit of business. And unlike so many players who turn up at City, they do take a little bit of time to settle in, don't they? So you sort of see what he's all about now, I think, and very much a Guardiola player, the way he can sort of run with the ball and eat up the ground. Guardiola's an incredible one, because my sort of contacts, the people I've sort of dealt with it, who cover Leipzig when the move was taking place, sort of stayed in touch with them, and they were telling me he really, really, really doesn't like playing left back. He won't want to play left back. But for a guy who doesn't like playing left back, he's making a pretty good job of it, isn't he? You could argue he's the best left back in the league at the moment, in fact. So, but again, he looks so comfortable on the ball, and just seems to have really grown in the last few weeks and scored some incredible goals. The one at the Bernabeu, I think I'll always stick in my head. But I still think eventually he will want to play centre half. I don't think he wants to be a left back forever. But looking like a great bit of business, and still very young as well. The City are going to get a lot of good years out of him.
Yeah, Adam, I'm really happy to hold my hands up and say that I was terribly wrong about Gvardiola earlier in the season. I thought defensively he was all over the place, and I thought going forward he didn't offer anything. And then you look at the last kind of 6-8 weeks when he's finally been given time in the team, defensively solid and pops the ball in every other week.
Yeah, I think there's probably a quote from me as well when we signed him. I think I was on here with Adam from Stat City, and I think I may have written him off before he'd even played a game. So I was also very wrong about him. And
yeah, mea culpa.
The other thing about the defenders, we've got so many of them. Where the hell's John Stones gone?
Yeah.
Where is he? Point. He's just John Stones was the best centre half in the league last year. And he's struggled with some injuries this year, and it's been very stop start. He can't get in the team now because you've got Ake and Gvardiol who cover the left side, and then he seems to prefer Diaz and now Akanji over Stone. So it's great to have so many defenders. My only concern is whether the same thing that happened with Laporte might happen to one of them over the summer, where one of them feels like they're not going to get any time. But Gvardiol's been brilliant, and he's, for someone who looks so clumsy, he's got great feet. The goal last week with his right foot where he chops inside, I didn't see that coming, because it always looks like he's going to fall over his own feet. But fair enough, he's proved a lot of people wrong. And he is young. He's really young. So
Convinced he was offside for the second one last week?
Maybe. I know that this has been talked about the penalty thing last week. And I saw somebody say, I think it was on Twitter, that that's the moment they were convinced we were going to win the league, where he says he doesn't want the penalty. Give it to someone who's going to score it. And that wouldn't happen at probably 18, 19 of the other clubs in the league. They would have let him take it. And if he'd have missed it, he'd have missed it.
Yeah, that to me, Martin says, he's terrified of Guardiola, because you know exactly what Guardiola will say if he takes that penalty.
Yeah, I know. But you've not had many Premier League defenders who've got a hat-trick, have you? So it was must have been tempting for him just to... I think he would have scored it, to be honest. But yeah, it was a good... it was the right call, wasn't it? I mean, it's not going to go down to goal difference now, I don't think, is it? But, you know, potentially it could have done had results gone slightly differently since then. So... give it to the guy who you think is going to score.
Yeah.
Just to go back to Adam on John Stones, I mean, it is interesting how he's sort of slipped out of it a little bit. And also that what must Gareth Southgate think? Because I think he's England's first choice centre-back, isn't he, really? Him and Maguire, probably. So you could argue that he's going to be going into the Euros fresh, or you could think he's going to be a little bit rusty. But Guardiola seems to absolutely love him. So I assume he will come again. But... yeah, at the moment, he's struggling to get a game.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
We'll look ahead whether he might play against West Ham shortly. But first, you might have seen that on Saturday at Fulham, Guardiola was wearing a thick woolen jumper despite the incredibly warm temperatures on the touchline. He was asked about it on Match of the Day. This is what he said.
It's a sunny day, it's 25 degrees, and yet you have a big pullover on. You're not too hot?
A lot. A lot. But I used this word for many, many times, so... we'll keep it until the end, even if it's 45 degrees.
Thanks, Brent. Appreciate it. Thank you.
And that got us thinking about superstitions. So I've been speaking to Martin Robert Hall, who is a sports psychology consultant, to find out why football is such a hotbed for the superstitious.
It's easy for anyone to fall into superstitions, actually. I guess it's quite common in football. You pick up what's in your environment. So a lot of people do it. You know, if you're in an environment where people are doing it all around you, it naturally will just, you know, it'll slip into your behaviour. And you might be looking at people thinking, well, if it works for them, it'll work for me. It's the trigger that is often the most interesting part. So, you know, if you change your boots or whatever it is, an item of clothing or something that you've eaten or something that you do, and then you go and play a great game, that is in our brain, that wires our brain to remember that's the nuances of maybe a changing behavior or changing environment or something I've done in my routine. And that's that trigger is what sort of cements it in our brain. And then the meaning we place on that is, oh, well, that worked for me, so I'll do that again next time.
Yeah. Do we have a habit of maybe just kind of like remembering the positives and ignoring the negatives? So like you say about a change to your routine, you might change your pre-match meal and play a wonderful game. And like keep doing that same thing. But then even you can have that meal, play a terrible game, but still the next time you still feel like you have to have that meal.
I guess that's the balance, whether it's healthy or unhealthy, sort of that balance of superstition. So I always talk about the difference between superstition and routine, with routine being something that you control and it being healthy. And it's good to have a routine to prepare yourself. So because ultimately, whether it's a routine or superstition, you've got to think of what's it trying to achieve. And what it's trying to achieve for somebody is a feeling. That's all it is. It wired in the brain, it's a feeling of, I'm feeling confident I'm going to go and have a good game. And so the balance is it something that's healthy and you can control it? Or is it something where it becomes, you're almost relying on it too much? Or if you don't do it, you start to think, I'm not going to play well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested in that as well, because I mean, there is a side of this where if you break that routine, you break that superstitious habit that you have, can that actually negatively affect a sports person's performance? Because if it sets you off in the mindset that you're not going to have a good game, suddenly it can spiral from there, could it?
Absolutely, it can. I've worked with players that have that exact challenge. You know, it might start small, so it's my lucky boots, my lucky pants. I put this boot on first, then that one, and that's all very common. But then it's where does it end? So people stack them and stack them and stack them. And to give you a bit of an extreme example, I find it's quite funny, but it's got the lessons in it are quite powerful. Is I go way back and I share this story with people I work with of Tim Henman, and we remember reading about him when he once, I think. So don't quote me on this, whether it was a game against Sampras, it was a big game, it was like a quarterfinal or something, and he had a shower before the game, and he went out and played like his best game in ages, and he just had it locked in his head from then on that before every game he needed to have a shower. Now, how inconvenient is that? So there was one game where he was late or something had happened, and you know the game had been pushed back, and he was... think he's like 10 minutes before going out on court in like a Wimbledon semi-final or something. And I can't go out there now. I need to go and have a shower. And that's when he realised to himself, no, this is stupid. This is just becoming a blocker now. So yes, it can definitely negatively impact someone's performance. And that's where that balance of it being healthy or, you know, veering into, actually now I'm thinking if I can't do without this. So it's always about the control element.
Yeah, control. I mean, control is an interesting word to use, because are superstitions about controlling things that you can't control? Because you think of a football game, and like it's so unpredictable how it goes that every little element of something that you can control is what people are after. I mean, like Guardiola said after the game with Fulham at the weekend in his Match of the Day interview, that he was wearing the thick woolly jumper on a hot touchline because it had worked for him in previous games. And I mean, like in terms of a football manager, he's all about control. He's about controlling absolutely everything on the pitch that he can. And yet here he is relying on what he's wearing on the touchline as being part of his pre-match build-up. Is it about that control?
It's about creating the feeling of control. So, of course, you mentioned Guardiola, and one of the things that he's known for is that the relentless detail that he goes into. So he's already controlling everything that he can. But then maybe, like you said, in football, there's so many uncontrollables. Is he finding a bit of solace, a bit of sort of peace of mind in that, you know, that anything could go wrong? When you think about, if you think about City's season so far and just how good of a team they are, but then still wasn't able to control it in all of the games, you know, in certain tournaments as well, like Champions League. So it's still about trying to find that feeling of, I'm getting a feeling of in control, even though it's not going to affect the result in any way. It's just going to change how he feels. So it might mean that he's a bit more relaxed.
Yeah. Is it the same? Is it the same sort of thing for fans? Because fans have very little impact into how games go on. And knowing that I was going to do this interview, I asked a few of the regulars on the podcast what superstitions they have. Adam Carter told us he always drives the same way to the Etihad, even if it's busy. Richard Burns has a lot of superstitions. He says he always uses the left-hand turnstile, always has the same order from the chip shop, always crosses his fingers for penalties. Previously, always used to wear the same pair of glasses because they were his lucky glasses. KC always wears underwear with blue on and then sky blue for really big games. Gaz says when City play at Wembley, he always has to walk around the stadium before he goes in. And yet none of this can materially affect how City play. So why do we do it?
Well, again, it's back to that feeling, isn't it? Because you want to, it's nicer to feel in control. And there's a strong link between that feeling of being in control and just what you call healthy sort of state of mind. Just some of those things you were saying there, I'm smiling because I'm thinking, how inconvenient is a lot of those things? You know, so how out of your way are you going just to create that feeling of a bit more certainty, a bit more feeling relaxed or confident that actually we might get a result? But it just shows how big of a part our emotions play, even when you're a fan, you've got no control. But I tell you what would be an interesting experiment for you all to do is, and really, you know, this has grown massively in sport, especially in football in the last few years, is data. So it's like you said, do we tend to remember it when it's worked and then just sort of forget, brush over it when it hasn't? But if you keep a track of it, actually, if you asked all of those contributors to your podcast, like, let's keep a track of how many times you've walked around the stadium or drove this way to the Etihad or whatever it is, and how many times do they actually lead you to winning or losing? Like, you'll find mixed data.
Yeah, we can't do that this season, though. There's a title on the line, and we wouldn't want to risk that at the moment, would we?
Well, like, and that's it. And it's that fear, isn't it, of, oh, well, if I change it, and then we feel responsible. But isn't that the beauty of football? What makes it so compelling is that it's irrational, and people start to think that these things that we do have an impact on the game. When, if you look at it logically and you step back from it, you go, there's no chance that has an impact on the game. But football's not logical, is it?
Yeah. On a serious point as well, just to finish, if there's anybody listening to this who feels particularly gripped by their superstitions and would like to kind of do something to change that behaviour, what advice would you have to people?
We could actually start there by the tracking. Actually keep a track of how much impact the superstition has. And I think it's about the difference between superstitions and routine. There's nothing wrong with having superstitions or routines that we think is going to help prepare us for a better result. So it's about, firstly, how inconvenient or how much time or how stressful is that whole routine or superstitions? How many of them have you got? And I think it's about starting there with an awareness, because if it's just wearing your lucky socks or whatever it is, then there's not too much inconvenience or stress caused by that. So creating that feeling of being in control, there's no harm that can come of it. But it's when you start to think, actually, I haven't got control of this now and I have to do it, then that would be the time to start just trying to unpick some of it.
The Blue Moon Podcast. If City won't let you down on the pitch, let us let you down off it instead.
That was Martin Robert Hall, who is a sports psychology consultant. I must admit, after hearing what some of the others on the podcast had said, Adam, that they do, every item of clothing that I wore for work on Tuesday had blue in it. Can't go taking any chances here, can we?
I ditched all superstitions in May of 2013, where I'd worn, I had a 91 to 93 home shirt, the brother with the chevrons on the sleeves. And that had been my lucky shirt until the Wigan game.
I was going to say, did Wigan kill it? Yeah.
Yeah. So for all the big games, like all the finals, I say all, I think we'd been in two at that point, the finals, the Wembley games, the United home game, all that kind of stuff, I'd always worn it. And after that, I now have zero superstitions, apart from every home game, I have to go for a wee before I go to my seat. Doesn't matter if I'm late, doesn't matter what time it is. I have to do that, but that's me clear otherwise. Nothing with clothing anymore. Not putting my socks on in any sort of order. I've got rid of all that.
Good, good. Martin, are you superstitious at all? Do you have any yourself?
Well, at City home games, Dave, I like to get as much from the pick and mix as I can in the press room. Yeah, if I don't get that, then it doesn't feel right. So
I understand entirely. Yeah, yeah. So, Adam, are you going to be doing nothing on Sunday? You'll go for a wee before the game, and that's it. You'll feel fine.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely fine. The only other things, and these are less superstitions but more routine. There's a lad that who's sat near us for however long I've been there, 15 years or whatever, in that seat. And I always have to say hello to him, and I usually end up touching him on his bald head. So I'm hoping Rob there on Sunday for me to just touch his little bald head. But otherwise, no. Sunday will be a bag of nerves and just hoping for the best.
Yeah.
Is that a bit like Laurent Blanc and Barthez? Adam, was it 98? Laurent Blanc had to kiss Barthez on his bald head.
It's not far off.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we don't know if it works or not, so we can't take the chance. That's all I'm saying. All the narrative, we talked about it earlier, Martin, all the narrative about games being a formality. The one thing we can absolutely say is that Guardiola, whatever people think, Guardiola will not be treating Sunday as one. What lessons do you think he's taken from Aston Villa, to a lesser extent that Brighton game in his second, third season, and even from before his time against QPR? What can he take from those games?
Yeah, I think that you know, there's still a game to be won, hasn't it? They can't go assuming that they're going to assuming that they just need to turn up and win. I think West Ham on paper at least look like good opponents, don't they, for this game? They don't really have anything to play for. They can't make the top seven. They're not going to get relegated. It's David Moyes' last game. Will the players have sort of put their tools down a little bit? So, as I say, on the face of it, if they were going to handpick an opponent for the last game, then it will probably be this one. And then, of course, there's the sort of City West Ham loving, isn't there, where their fans seem to like each other a lot. So, man, I'd imagine that West Ham fans don't particularly like Arsenal either. So, it looks like the sort of game that City would want. But, there's still a job to be done. And I think maybe just focus on what they're doing themselves and not worry too much about what's going on at the Emirates, really, and make sure that City get the job done. And I think against Brighton and Villa, they've actually ended up going behind, haven't they, City, and just in classic Manchester City style, making it a little bit difficult for themselves on the other days when it's gone to the last day. So maybe if they could just take the lead in this one and calm a few nerves for you guys.
Yeah, I don't know where it stands, this one, Adam, because the last time City played West Ham on the final day needing to win, they just won. And it was comfortable 2-0 Pellegrini season. But at the same time, like the other side of the superstition is no team has ever been in second place on the final day and then gone on to win the Premier League title. So that must happen sometime. Maybe that's something to worry about. I don't know.
Not this Sunday, no. I can't even be bothered getting into a headspace where I think we don't win. Like, there's every chance that we don't, but I can't even think about that this time.
And
I think the QPR one was the QPR one, and I file that under its complete own emotional roller coaster. The Villa one, I still thought we were going to win when we went 2-0 down. Don't know why, just probably blind faith. So. I'm hoping, as we say, that we can just go ahead and win. I would say the other thing is, it's no cut and dry thing that Arsenal will beat Everton. Like, this is going to sound really daft, but I wouldn't really want to be playing Everton on the last day. Don't know why.
My memories of City Everton on the last day is that they've battered them every time. So it's like, yeah.
Yeah, Aguero's last game, wasn't it?
Yeah. Just picking up on the Villa point, though, Martin, because obviously the idea that City could go behind and kind of keep going with it. We'd been talking about nerves earlier on in the show, and I think they look nervous against Villa. There's a chance that, well, I mean, they will be nervous ahead of this game. So there's a chance that West Ham can play on that.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. But I think the Villa one, I guess there was the Steven Gerrard sort of narrative as well, wasn't there? I don't really see any sort of subplots here. You could say that, you know, Paqueta is a possible target for City in the summer. Could he really turn it on? But no, of course there'll be nerves because, you know, to lose it on the last day would be devastating for everybody. But as I said before, you know, Pep said on Monday that he thinks it's a good thing for them to be a few nerves, a bit of adrenaline, and of course they've got the home crowd behind them as well. It's the home record has been so formidable, hasn't it? But that you can only really, you know, I can only really see City winning it. But there'll be there's inevitably there'll be a couple of little bumps in the road, won't there, before it's finally over the line. So let's see how it plays out.
Yeah, Adam. For in terms of selection, obviously the Edison thing is up in the air given his injury in midweek. But apart from that, any reason to change anything for you?
I don't think so. I wonder if he'll go a little bit more attacking. I feel like the team that he's played in the last couple of games has been a bit of an edgy team where you pack the midfield, you've got loads going backwards, and we've conceded one goal in six games, which is, like, look at the defence earlier in the season. It's planets and stratospheres away from that shaky bit that we had. So I wonder if he'll play a Doku or a Grealish.
Yeah. Where's Grealish been, Martin?
Yeah, I mean, he's had one or two injuries, hasn't he? But I think was he ill for the Fulham game? Was it the Fulham game? There was one game where he missed through illness recently. But anyway, yeah, he was fine again for Spurs, but was just on the bench. So yeah, I think other people have just sort of come in and played well, haven't they? That's his sort of problem. A bit like John Stones, I suppose. But yeah, I mean. It's not been an amazing season for him, hasn't it? There's been moments, but a bit like his first season, I suppose. So City will hope that he's more like the treble version of Grealish next season. You know, he could still have a role to play on Saturday, like Adam said. He could decide to go from the start with Grealish in, maybe leave Kovacic out and go on the front foot, but. Yeah, Doku's, you know, he's a great option to have from the bench, isn't he? I think he really scares opponents. I've not been massively impressed with him when he's been from the start, but when he comes off the bench, he's a handful, isn't he?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Adam, fair play to Guardiola in midweek as well, because I thought Doku was the wrong choice for that game. I was thinking I absolutely wanted Mr. Control on when everything needed controlling, and he brought Doku on and he did the business.
Same. I was stunned that he seemed to be going for the second goal, didn't he? Where I was just thinking, bring on another defender, bring Grealish on, let's take this, let's make it as dirty and horrible as possible. But he must have seen something. You see the way that he skinned Porro inside out immediately. He must have just seen it. And it's a real boost for Doku, that, because as Martin said, he's been great in spells. Usually off the bench, not usually from the start. And that's a lovely thing for him to have come on, won the penalty, looked really dangerous. So, yeah, it's a good thing. I just wonder if he will... I can't see Doku starting on Sunday.
Yeah.
I can't even see Grealish starting, I don't think. I think he might just think, this team has got us here in the last few games. Let them go out and win it.
Yeah, it's that superstition thing again. Mancini was superstitious in the end of his running the team. He stuck with the same team because it was winning. I mean, you were all Marcin. He was the most superstitious man I've ever known.
Absolutely, yeah. He had all sorts of quirks, and I remember I was told that after the Wigan game, which was of course a car crash for everybody involved, and for the first thing he wanted was his hairdryer, because he. Yeah, that was always what he did at the end of the game. So he asked the kit man to go and get him a hairdryer. So it was just his thing. So despite everything that was going on around him, to make sure his hair looked right for the press conferences. But he was a character, definitely, Mancini.
Yeah. Wouldn't have purple kits as well, I think. I think he didn't like purple kits, yeah, because of bad luck colour. Where had they been? They didn't fly home from somewhere because the plane aborted a takeoff. And he was like, no, that's bad luck. We can't. We have to travel tomorrow.
He was absolutely terrified of flying, Mancini. Yeah, so that was Turin in 2010, I think it was. I was on that one. We actually got put in a very nice hotel as a result of that overnight, and got a nice feed. Yeah, there was one I was told that he insisted on the players having meatballs as their post match meal, if you like, but the post match meal from a European trip was. To be had, you know, when they were on the flight back. So he tried to think of a way of getting a great big thing of meatballs for 40-odd people onto a flight. the one idea that they came up with was to sort of individually package up the meatballs and then put, so that each person could put their own meatballs through security. But I think he had to abort it, but he was that superstitious that because they won, you know, they'd won and they'd had meatballs, he was trying to find a way that they could have meatballs again. So extraordinary lengths that people go to.
Amazing. Love the man.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Listen to it. Drink it in.
Let's get a view from the West Ham side of things now. I've been speaking to James Jones from We Are West Ham to find out how this season has gone for the Hammers.
The season started really well for us. And coming into 2024, there was a lot of hope and a lot of somewhat expectation that we would end the season sort of in and around the top six, top seven, having, you know, going into 2024 on the back of beating Arsenal at the Emirates and beating United at home and really feeling like we were on the upward trajectory. So to only win, what was it, four Premier League games since the turn of the year and to finish ninth has ended in a bit of disappointment, really. When it goes to show just how far David Moyes has taken us when a club like West Ham and the fans of a club like West Ham are looking at ninth in the Premier League as a bitter disappointment, given that's roughly where we averaged over in Premier League history. So in years gone by, that was a pretty good season for us. Now it's a disappointment. So it's been an okay season, but disappointing end.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, looking from the outside in, I can understand why a lot of people would be talking about, you know, having scored more goals than last season, had a, you know, I think it was better points tally than last season. Obviously, David Moyes has gone on to win a European trophy with West Ham. And yet from the inside, there's obviously this kind of feeling of not unhappiness, maybe a little bit of discontent with how things have gone this season. And like, as a City fan from like years gone by, I absolutely get it. I completely understand. When I think back to kind of like the Stuart Pearce era at City, we had a lot of people from the outside talking about, well, it was a solid Premier League team that, you know, had a solid finish, but sometimes you just want a little bit more from the team and you want a little bit more energy. And is the energy run out for Moyes, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a number of factors, really. I think there is an element of the energy running out. I think there have been a number of games this season and last that we've gone into with what the fans feel to be the wrong approach. You know, this season, you know, we didn't beat Burnley at home. We were 2-0 down to Burnley at home within half an hour because we went into the game sitting back and allowing Burnley to attack us. Similar thing with Bournemouth at home and Sheffield United away, and playing against teams that are struggling for their lives at the bottom. Not so much Bournemouth, but the other two definitely. We go, well, we've got the players. Let's attack them. Let's put them on the back foot. Let's enjoy a possession for once. Against the bigger teams, you can't do that. And we've been pretty good over the last 4 years against the so-called top six. But the approach of kind of letting the other team have the ball, regardless of who that team is, was beginning to just bore the fans a little bit. We just want to be a little bit more entertained. Mm. And the other thing that annoyed fans was the way in which David Moyes likes to work with a small squad. Because essentially it's cost West Ham in at least two of his four seasons, maybe even three, in that, you know, they ran out of steam towards the end of the season. It cost us a couple of years ago when we got to the semi-finals of the Europa League, lost to Frankfurt over two legs because we were knackered. You know, arguably we should have gone on and won that competition. And the same thing happened this season, obviously losing to Leverkusen. You know, there's no shame in that this year.
I was going to say, of all the teams, you've run into exactly an absolute powerhouse there, haven't you?
Exactly. But in the league, they'd run out of steam. You know, we're still relying on Mikel Antonio up front, who has been good for us, granted, but, you know, he's 34 and we can't continue to rely on a 34-year-old striker to get us through games and to get us through to the end of the season. So, you know, and he's come out and said, well, you know, we've played more games than anyone else, but I like playing with a smaller squad. It's like, well, you can't have it both ways. You know, if you want to get into Europe, you need to expect to play more games. Therefore, you need a bigger squad to be able to handle it over the course of an entire season, not just 4 or 5 months of it. So that's, you know, they're two of the main reasons why fans have just got to the point where they're like, look, thanks, Dave. You know, you've been amazing for us, but we kind of want something different now, I think.
Yeah, where does he stand in kind of West Ham folklore and West Ham kind of history for what he's achieved?
Well, for me, he's a legend. When he took over 4 years ago, I'll be the first to hold my hands up and go, why on earth are we bringing him back? You know, yes, he saved us before, but it just seems a little bit silly that we've gone back to him, and he is what he's achieved has been beyond anyone's wildest dreams at West Ham. To go from bottom three to regular top six contenders, winning a European competition, two European semi-finals, winning our group every year in Europe. It's the stuff that I just thought I'd never experienced a West Ham fan. So to do all of that in the space of 4 years puts him as legend status for me. And to end a trophy drought that had gone on for 43 years, a European trophy drought that had gone on for more than 50 years, for me, he cannot be seen as anything other than a West Ham legend.
Yeah. Looking at this weekend then, because obviously the dynamic is fairly simple from a City point of view, win the game, win the title, that sort of thing. how will Moyes approach this one? How do you think he'll go about trying to stop that happening?
I think it will be 93 minutes of just 11 men beyond the ball for West Ham, and try to catch Manchester City on the counter. Given that we've got nothing to play for, you know, I don't think we'll put up much of a resistance. And even if we did want to put up much resistance, I think Manchester City are far too good for us. We could play the game of our lives and probably still lose 3 or 4 nil because this is the way we set up. We've got injuries. You know, we're probably going to have Angelo Ogbonna at the back alongside Kurt Zouma. Ogbonna's on his last legs. Kurt Zouma can't run anymore. So that is a worry for Arsenal. We'll set up to defend and try and keep the score low, and try and catch City on the counter when we can. But that'll be just about as much as we offer, I think.
Yeah. Do you pay any attention to City in previous final days? Because you look at a couple of years ago, they had the Villa game where City were clearly very nervous going into that. And, you know, Villa raced into a 2-goal lead. It's a different manager and different era, but the famous QPR game, City were clearly very nervous again. Is there anything of that? Can West Ham play on that?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm going off a lot of my thought process is going off our recent form, and we've won four Premier League games since the turn of the year. I think we've conceded almost around about 40 goals since the turn of the year. We haven't been very good of late. It's not like we've been in decent form, and we want to have one last hurrah before the summer. We're struggling for form, and I think a lot of the players are going, well, manager's on his way out. We've got nothing to play for. Just can't wait for the season to be over. So I don't think I'll be very surprised if we end up causing a bit of a stir and making it a little bit interesting on the final day, let's put it that way.
Yeah. Looking back at previous meetings with West Ham and looking at who's in the squad from a City point of view, that always bothers me. You've mentioned Mikel Antonio already. He always scares me. Jared Bowen in there as well has done damage against City in the past. James Ward-Prowse is another one who worries me. Who are the players that could cause City problems at weekend?
We've mentioned one of them in Jared Bowen. He's playing for a spot in the England squad this summer. He's had an absolutely fantastic season with 20 goals in all competitions. So he's one that will definitely look to cause problems. I think Mohamed Kudus as well. Very much of the Jeremy Doku mode, just not as consistent but likes to run at players. If he is on the ball and he's allowed to run, he'll beat two or three players. So those two I'd be looking at if I was a City fan going, they could probably hurt us. But yeah, beyond that, if Paqueta's playing, he might be playing for putting himself in a shot window for the summer. But yeah, those two, Kudus and Bowen, are the two I'll be looking at.
Yeah, is just looking down the list of players, is Maxwell Cornet available? Because he's hurt City in the past and we don't like him.
I think he's injured, I think, which has been 90% of his West Ham career. I mean, even when he does play, just not good enough.
Yeah.
Not good enough.
Yeah. It feels awful to segue on that point to this player in particular, but obviously the elephant in the room here is that Calvin Phillips is on loan with West Ham. His time at City can only really be deemed as something of a disaster. What's he been like for the portion of the season he's been with you?
Well, it's been well documented that it's been a disaster at West Ham as well. I think it's been very, very public in the way that it just hasn't worked for him. But a lot of West Ham fans, you know, have been quite unfair towards him. I think, from my point of view, I think he's a player that was low on confidence and needed the move. But I think he's gone to a club that probably there was too much expectation and pressure for him to really get his confidence back. He had to hit the ground running. And within, 30 seconds of his debut against Bournemouth, he was given a hospital pass by Zouma, which then led to Solanke scoring. And he got the blame for that. And it was just an uphill task for him to get his confidence back, and gave away a penalty at Newcastle, which was unfair. It wasn't a penalty in my eyes, but he gets blamed for that. Got sent off at Nottingham Forest for two very, very dubious yellow cards. Got blamed for that, saying he was reckless. But again, if you look at them, you know, not really yellow cards in my book. So I think he's just been really, really unlucky. I think the move, although he needed it, it was probably the wrong club, because there was a lot going on at West Ham that required a player like him to hit the ground running and be confident. And it's just not him, is it? So I feel really sorry for him. And I really hope that we do see the Calvin Phillips that we're used to seeing when he was at Leeds and with England in the future. But yeah, I don't know where he goes from here, to be honest.
It's probably not at West Ham, and it's almost certainly not at City. You mentioned Paquetar. Do you see him moving in the summer? Because I know City are still interested. What's the latest with him and the gambling issue?
Well, the last I heard of it was that he was going to be cleared, because there was actually no evidence to suggest that he was involved. He's said he's innocent. He's claimed his innocence throughout the whole thing. And the fact it's gone really, really quiet suggests that it might just kind of just end up sort of being a complete non-thing in the end. I don't think he's actually been cleared yet, but the last I saw of it a couple of months ago was that was the way it was heading. Personally, I'd like it to drag on a little bit longer, just so we can keep hold of him for at least another 6 months. But I think he's got an £85 million release clause, which is activated. It comes into play this summer. On his contract, so it'll cost City a little bit of money if they do want to buy him. But with the new manager coming in, we don't know what he's going to say to Paquetá. We don't know how we might see him fitting in, or whether he sees him fitting in at all. He might have a completely different idea. So, but I love him. I think he's an absolute Rolls Royce of a player. Bit inconsistent, but when he's on his game, one of the best players I've seen in a West Ham shirt. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. It's time, James. We've got the charity bet coming up. There is obviously, there feels an affinity between City and West Ham. There's the good old West Ham, Chester City memes that go around. Please tell me that will continue on Sunday.
Yes. I put in my charity bet for our podcast, I put down a correct score of City to win 4-0. More I think about it, I probably wish I'd gone 5 or 6, to be fair. It's West Ham do not want to ask them to win the league, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
I don't think there's going to be anything like what we saw at the Tottenham Stadium the other night. But we just don't want Arsenal to win. We don't want Declan Rice to win the trophy. He left us to win trophies, and he's not going to win one this year. So he's relying on us to get him one. So it's going to be a City win for me, pretty comprehensively.
Yeah. What score are you? Have you sticking with 4-0?
Do you know what? No, I'm going to, because I regret not doing it in our podcast, I'm going to go 5.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
That was James Jones from We Are West Ham. It's time for the charity bet. We've got one chance to add to the total on this week's show, and it's the final Premier League game of the season. William Hill is giving us 3 £10 correct score singles. The winnings are going to the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. They have their final collection of the season on Sunday in aid of Manchester Central Food Bank. Let's bring in Nick from the Fans Food Bank Group. Nick, welcome to the show. How's this season gone in terms of amounts collected?
It's been brilliant. I think it's been, safe to say, it's easily been our best season yet. We're already coming up to just under 3 tons of food, which is food and toiletries, which is absolutely incredible.
Yeah. What is, like, in terms of 3 tons, how does that rank to other seasons? I mean, previously, where does it stand?
I mean, given we've still got a game to go, I mean, we was a little bit under about 2.7 last year. I mean, we've had to, I'll be absolutely honest, the TV scheduling, especially in the women's game and other, you know, Friday night games, stuff like that, we can still only do weekends. So that's affected us this year. It comes to almost 5,000 meals have been provided to people, to Mancunians struggling to feed themselves and their families in the Manchester area this season, which is absolutely incredible. And the money, the £15,000 raised from the Charity Shield boycott fundraiser right at the very start of the season meant that the food bank could support their activities over the summer while we couldn't be collecting, which was fantastic.
Yeah, I was going to say, how important have City fans been to Manchester Central Food Bank? I'm right in thinking that City fans, because of the work that you guys are doing, are the biggest donor to the food bank, Ali.
Absolutely. We're just allowing City fans to be as good as we know that we are, and community-minded as we know that our fans are. We are, yeah, still maintained to be the biggest regular donor to the food bank. And I was just told that City fans donated 10% of the entire donations that Manchester Central Food Bank received in the entirety of last year. So honestly, I really can't stress just how important that is, because they do a lot of work, not just about giving out emergency food parcels. It allows those donations, regular donations by City fans, allow the food bank to focus on other really important work, keeping money in people's pockets, stopping people falling into the worst parts of poverty.
Mm. Yeah, and that means obviously we're all hoping for a City win on Sunday. It'll mean that they'll win the fourth title in a row. Ahead of the game, people will obviously be in a celebratory mood. So if they want to come down and make a donation, where can they find you?
As ever, we'll be opposite the Big Asda underneath the Nexon Tyre Bridge. You'll see our big banner there. And we're always there 2.5 hours before kickoff, stopping half an hour before kickoff. We welcome home and away fans as usual.
Yeah, and every donation welcome.
Every donation welcome. If you've not got a donation, we'd love to just come and have a chat. It's really important either way.
That's Nick from the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. Let's see if we can't improve our tally of £1,040 for the season now with our predictions. Martin, I'll start with you. What are you having for this one?
Yeah, so I'm going to go with 3-1 City, Dave. So I think that be a reasonably comfortable afternoon. I can see West Ham possibly nicking one, but I think it'll be a straightforward day for City.
God love you if it's true. 10-1 and £100 if you're right. We've heard James went for 5-0 City, which I would love even more. 12-1 and £120 if he's right. Adam, what are you having?
I'm going for broke for the charity bet now. I'm going 5-2 City.
Excellent. If that comes in, it will be our biggest win. So, fingers crossed for it.
I'm not going to lie. That's why I'm doing it.
Yeah, excellent. Go big or go home. Chase the records is what I say.
Exactly.
45-1, £450 if you're right. Just to check, though, Adam, just because I'm obviously talking about QPR and Villa a bit earlier on, are West Ham 2-0 up in this scenario at any point?
No. I think when I thought about it, the West Ham go a goal up, then City go 3-1 up, West Ham pull one back, 3-2, and then a couple more goals for City, 5-2. All the fans are hugging each other, home and away end, holding hands, singing tunes. Okay, it's going to be beautiful.
So. Yeah.
Hey, I like the sound of that. I'd love to know that. Good report, that.
Yeah. Poznan in the away end, that's what we want to see. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for information on how to gamble responsibly, take a look at begambleaware.org. We will finish with a couple of listener questions. We'll squeeze them in now, which means we have to grab Higgy's jingle to start with.
It's the listener's questions. It's the listener's questions. Don't be giving us lots of flannel or suggesting it's ask the panel, because it's not called that. All right. It's called It's the Listener's Questions. Make it thoughtful or inventive. Try to provide an answer incentive. It's the Listener's Questions. Thank you.
There we go. I wonder if he regrets doing that. I have tried to back it to music, but I've not been able to. It just sounds better a cappella. So we'll plough on with it.
It's very League of Gentlemen, isn't it?
It's a little bit, yeah. We'll start with Jack, who has been in touch on the emails to say, if City win on Sunday, they'll have achieved something no other club has done in the history of English football. They would also do it a year after winning the treble. How on earth has Guardiola motivated the team to keep going? Why doesn't he get the praise for that? Martin, whether or not he gets the praise for it is something I don't know if he really cares about that. But at the same time, you look at what the team has achieved over like season on season on season. It is actually remarkable, isn't it, that they are still at that level at this point in the cycle.
I do, yeah. I can see Jack's point. You know, it is incredible, and I'm not sure they do. You know, people. I always think, you know, perhaps people only realise just how amazing this year has been after Pep's gone. You know, once the dust settles a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I didn't expect them to be in this position where they were, you know, fighting for a double on the back of a treble. It's an amazing position to find themselves into. Carl Walker brought up the other week that after United had won the treble, Dwight York went in to see Alex Ferguson and said he needed a sabbatical. He needed a few months off, which apparently is true. Dwight York said it himself. But I think, you know, given all the effort that went into last season, and you know, you probably again perhaps just appreciate that over the last few weeks, just what an amazing achievement that was to do the treble. You know, sort of keeping all those plates spinning. You know, to come back from that and then. To go again, I think he's amazing. But Pep's just relentless, isn't he? Like, you know, you see him on the touchline, and it's like, how on earth does he keep finding the energy to do it and to motivate his team like that? You almost feel tired watching him sometimes. He's incredible.
Yeah, Adam, it's a weird situation to be in because after everything they achieved last year and the year before, and the way things had gone. And the way this season looked like it was going, you know, around Christmas time, through the winter, I was kind of all right with not being as good as previous years. And now they're one game away from making English football history, and I can't think of anything I want more. Do you know? Like, it feels so greedy, but at the same time, it's like you can't get this close to four in a row and then slip up now, can you?
Yeah, I think I had the same feelings where I thought, we're not going to top last year, and we've done it now. We've won everything that we set out to win and whatever. But then the incentive's there to get four in a row, and then you slip up a little bit. But then we're at the end of the season and it's there for us. There's four in a row to win. There's a double to win. And I don't think we've won the double before, have we? I don't think we've won Premier League and FA Cup on its own. I know that we've won the domestic treble, and I think that would be another little first. But the way that Pep manages to navigate things is what really, really shocks me every season. To go through little lows and dips throughout the season, and then towards the end, he's a machine. And he'll get a lot of the credit, and of course he should, but the players to be able to, like Martin said, some of the United players that 99 season will have thought, I just need some time off. The players have just dusted themselves off and gone, and they just want more and more. And Pep has built that. He's built a team of characters that he knows want to win. He gets rid of players if he doesn't think they fit into his, not just his system, but his way of thinking, that we are going out there to win, and they will relentlessly keep on trying to win. We won't always win everything, but they're never going to stop. And I think that's why the fans are so invested in this team in particular as well, because they really are monsters when it comes down to it. And I think the celebrations on Sunday, fingers crossed, if everything goes well, will be like they were after winning the treble. It'll feel like a real like hard fought win, I think, this season. Last year, Arsenal slipped up way before the end of the season. It was there for us, but to take it to the last day, to still have the energy to get over the line, will be amazing if we can do it.
Yeah, and it's something else, isn't it, Martin? When you look at like Arsenal this season, Liverpool in the last couple of years, like as much as fans talk about the reason why fans talk about hating those sides is because they're such relentless challengers as well. And like to have to beat those off each year has just been remarkable.
Yeah, yeah. Adam used the word monsters there, and it reminded me Klopp called his Liverpool players mentality monsters, didn't he? But you know, if that's true, then what does that make this City team? You know, just the sort of the mentality that they've got to keep wanting to win is incredible. And you know, there's going to be a lot written about Klopp over the next few days, obviously with his last game coming. But you know, to have sort of seen off a team as good as that, you know, so often over the last few years. You know, he's going with one Premier League title, isn't he? Which for that Liverpool side has got to be disappointing, really. And that's, you know, almost entirely down to how good City have been, and this Arsenal side as well. You know, people have suggested they've bottled it in the past. They're certainly not bottlers now, but. De Bruyne's done some TV stuff this week, and he says you've got to be almost perfect for a long period of time if you're going to be the champions. And when you've got this City team in, I think you have to be completely perfect to top this City team. Almost, it's just been an incredible run, and yeah, absolutely worthy of their place in history, which they're going to get.
Yeah, I read somewhere that winning one title with Liverpool is like winning five elsewhere anyway. So it doesn't matter. I read it somewhere. I can't remember. Yeah. Andy's been in touch on the emails as well to say, I wondered if you're aware of websites such as Live Football Tickets. It appears they have over 3,000 tickets for the FA Cup final, with plenty available in city sections. This was a couple of weeks ago that he sent this in. So it might not still be the same. But he says it was also the same for the recent Real Madrid home game, right up to the day of the game. I'm lucky enough to be a season ticket holder with enough points to secure a ticket through the official sale from the club. But it still concerns me that there are genuine City fans out there struggling for tickets, while sites like this seem to have plenty available for extortionate prices. How do sites such as these get hold of tickets in such quantities? Adam, when you hear that, I wasn't aware of this, but when you hear that basically tickets are available elsewhere through non-official channels quite so soon, it's quite worrying, isn't it? When I've got mates that haven't been able to get cup final tickets. I presume you're the same. Like, they should be eligible for tickets, shouldn't they?
Yeah. I mean, we could have a whole podcast on City's ticketing systems, and there are some real pros to it. There's also some real cons to it as well. And we can't say that there's proof that City are putting them on there themselves. I know that City do have relationships with some of these secondary ticketing sites and whatnot, but there's no proof there that City themselves are putting them on. But actual genuine fans are doing this. Like, City fans are as guilty as anyone else. Like, there's people who have bought a ticket through legitimate means, through the club, who are then selling them on these sites for, I've just had a little look, minimum 400 quid a go. And I suppose that's, like, I don't know what the club can do about that. They can try, and I believe that they are trying over the next season to really root this out, but it's a problem that's gone on forever.
In fairness to the club, for the Real Madrid game that Andy mentions, they did change the criteria, didn't they, for who could buy tickets based on the season before.
Yeah, which was a lot better, unless you were actually at the game and it was still just as bad as the year before, because I still suspect people were buying them and selling them on. And that is a sad thing to have, but I think it's just the way that it goes, and City are never going to be able to placate everyone, I don't think, with how they sell tickets, especially now the club is where it's never been before. We're a real global fan base now for the first time, and people are clambering over us match-going fans to get those tickets. They'll spend £400 on a ticket. They don't care. They don't care what they have to spend to go and see Haaland play at the Etihad, and they'll pay it for Wembley, and that's just the way things are going. So the one thing that really did wind me up was all of a sudden last week there was, 3,000 added tickets on, where people thought they couldn't get it. They couldn't get a ticket, and then all of a sudden, we've actually got 2,500 more tickets in our back pockets that we said was unavailable. So that will have wound people up, because they'll have already written it off, and it's not an insubstantial amount of money. The tickets are £100 plus, unless you were lucky enough in the first batch to get the 50 quid ones. And add on top of that travel, and if you need to stay over and all the rest of it, people can't just do that, or a lot of people can't just do that with a week's notice. And that's the tough thing to swallow here. The secondary site thing is not nice, but this having 2,500, that, like, where did they come from?
Yeah, I was going to ask Martin, is it fair for the FA to be able to suddenly release a load more tickets after we thought the cup final had sold out, especially at prices lower than people had already paid?
Yeah, I know it's disappointing, that, isn't it? But just to pick up on what Adam said there, you know, City now have a global fan base. I've been lucky to go on quite a few pre-season tours with City, and the way it's grown, the way it's mushroomed, if you like, the whole Manchester City thing has been incredible. The last one we did in Japan and South Korea, honestly, the Korea one in particular, it was like Beatlemania. It was astonishing. So, you know, they are going to have this problem now where people are going to want to buy tickets, and there'll be people in the middle who are finding ways to get their hands on tickets and to sell them on. So that's something that City are going to have to find a way to navigate, I suppose. But I mean, you know, in lots of ways it's a good thing, but you don't want to be sort of squeezing out the guys like you two who've followed them for all these years. So it's a puzzle.
Yeah. Right, well, that brings us to an end for this week's Blue Moon podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you to my guests as well, Adam Keyworth.
Thanks for having me.
And Martin Blackburn.
Thank you very much, Dave. Enjoyed it. Cheers, Adam.
There is a clip of this week's Patreon show coming up, so stay tuned for that. Also, tickets are now on sale for the Blue Moon Podcast live show taking place after the FA Cup final. It's on Tuesday the 28th of May, and it's at Idle Hands in the Northern Quarter in Manchester. Tickets are £3 plus another 96p booking fee, but all of your £3 will be going straight to the Man City Fans Food Bank support group. We'll be reviewing the season. It's always a good night, so if you're free, get yourself a ticket and come on down. I am still working on getting us an ex-player to be part of it as well, so hopefully I'll have something to announce on that front soon. Before that, though, it's the small matter of West Ham at home on Sunday. I'll be back next week to review whatever happens. Join me then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
I was 3 years old, so that's why I don't remember much about it. But the reason it means so much to me as a fan is because my middle name is Vaughan. Believe it or not, Katie Vaughan is my name. And I went to the game with my dad. We sat in the Platt Lane, and he had a bet that Tony Vaughan would score, obviously with my middle name being Vaughan, and he did. So I remember it being, you know, a bit manic. Don't remember anything about the goal. Since seeing the goal, obviously on YouTube, all I remember about the game was going outside after the match and my dad being stopped by Channel M. Do you remember Channel M?
Oh, yeah.
And they wanted to interview him just as, like, you know, me and my dad as fans are interviewing fans, and me and my dad got on the telly. I just remember being on his shoulders and being on the telly. But yeah, that's all I remember about going to Main Road. And then obviously when it got knocked down, I remember going to, like, see it before it got knocked down. My mum always used to, like, give me a packed lunch, and I always used to, for some reason, take my colouring book. Don't know why. Like, why would you go to the football? I think it was just my dad's way of saying, like, sit there and be quiet while I watch football kind of thing.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. And join us again next time for another episode.